All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It's 9 o'clock. Ooh, 9 o'clock on the nose. Good job, Sean and Seth. Right on cue, right on clock. We do Take a Mania at this time every Friday. The worst takes that we've heard in the last week going up against the defending champ. Love that we're bumping in with No Chance in Hell by Vince McMahon. I love that. Or Vince McMahon's theme song. He didn't sing it. So here we go. We do this every week. We've been doing it since February. We've had many champions hold the strap, some longer than others. Only for maybe 5 minutes if a bad enough take pops up in the same segment. That's happened a couple of times. Happened last week. But nevertheless, the champ that emerged from last week was former Kansas City radio host, now podcaster, Kevin Keatsman. Been in that market for a long time. And he's got a podcast now that's half political, half sports. And he had this very polarizing take, bad enough take to become champion of Take a Mania, about Patrick Mahomes' dad bod.
Meanwhile, vacation photos are popping up of Patrick Mahomes, and he's fat. I'm going to say it, and I'm going to tell you the truth. That's why you hit the play button. He's an embarrassment. You're a $500 million quarterback. You've made all these comments in the offseason that we're going to do our talking on the field. We got our butts kicked in the Super Bowl. We're coming back with a vengeance. Dude, you're fat. Your belly would be fat at my pool, hanging out with us, 60-year-olds, okay? My skin's flabbier than yours. I get it. Stop. Stop the fast food. Do a sit-up. Do something. Yeah, I'm sure he's worked out and strengthened his arm, and he's done all kinds of different things, quarterback things, but there's no training to this man. I don't understand it. He's not a kid anymore. You can't just run through your NFL career eating Taco Bell all the time and door dashing fried chicken, which he loves, from that one place over in Leawood where he gets it all the time. It's time, dude. It's time.
Okay, I mean, I don't know how much we need to re-adjudicate this.
Yeah,
take.
We don't have to re-adjudicate. Yeah. It's just so bad. The biggest thing about it, that I hate about it, honestly, okay, no, there's multiple things I hate about it. Like, the fact that, if you've seen the photos that he was talking about, like, no, he's not fat.
No.
I think all I know is that Keatsman spends too much time on Instagram.
Yeah.
Because he, like, his version of what an NFL quarterback looks like must be fueled by, like, just gawking at Instagram fitness influencers or something.
Yeah.
He's not. He doesn't have a great body. He's got a dad bod.
Yeah.
But he's not. And he doesn't look any different than he's looked in previous years or anything.
No.
And obviously, just like he does all kinds of. It's a dumb take.
Okay. It's a dumb.
He's the champion for a reason. We don't have to explain it.
That's right. So he is the champ. That is the champion take right now in Take a Mania. All right. So here we go. I'm the one who finds the talent. Seth decides who goes over in these things.
And I think I realize we need to explain this every week because some people don't get it. This is the – you win it by being a horrible take.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Every week we get a few people saying, like, no, guys, that's a bad take. How could that be? Right. That's the point.
That's why it's
the champion.
It's an ironically named segment, Take a Mania. Yes. Yeah. So this is Steve Sarkisian at SEC Media Days this week. Talking about the University of Texas and where NIL and money to players fits within their culture there.
We only have so much money to go around. And so we've got to do a great job evaluating. We've got to do a great job of rewarding those players that are doing it at a high level within our program so that they don't go anywhere else. But we've also got to continue to develop our players as they grow and make sure that our players aren't doing this for the idea of money. And I think sometimes, quite frankly, I think it hurts us a little bit in recruiting in the fact that when kids come on our campus, one of the first things we do, we don't talk about NIL. We don't talk about NIL or revenue sharing or publicity rights until the very end. And that may hurt us on some kids, but if a kid is coming to Texas for that reason, we don't want them anyway. You know, we want kids that want to be at the University of Texas because of the school, the coaches, the team, the culture, all those things that go into it. And, oh, by the way, you can get publicity rights or revenue share, so on and so forth. If you're coming for the other reason, he's probably going to be the guy in 18 months that's back in the portal going somewhere else where they're going to offer him more money.
Okay. He says some very valid things there. Please make your analogy again today for those who missed it when we played that audio yesterday. Of the call girl.
This is like a guy taking a high-priced escort out to dinner and acting like the money isn't a matter. The money isn't a factor, despite everybody knowing what's going to happen.
The sex at the end that you know is coming.
Yeah. Like, okay, yeah, Joe, you don't have to talk about the money. It's already been agreed to.
Right.
So, it's a bad take, but it's also, it's him trying to present an image, and it speaks to the truth of also, you do want to, yes, you... Texas spends more money than anybody else. And when you do spend more money than anybody else, it's easy to not talk about money when you're the richest guy. You know, it's easy to make it about the... I love reading these autobiographies by billionaires where they act like they were never driven by the money. It was never a thing. It was always about the love of creating microprocessors or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy to say after you've reached the pinnacle, okay? Shut up with your money-grubbing ass.
But
this isn't as bad a take as the Mahomes take.
No, I don't think so either. I'm with you on that one. Imagine the owner of the Dodgers saying, there's only so much money to go around, you know. Kind of what it is.
You know what it feels like? It's almost like when some kid that inherits his father's wealth and fortune and becomes CEO of the company tries to present it like it's almost a disadvantage in a lot of ways because people's... I had to prove to people that they had to take me for real.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, but by virtue of that statement, I can't take you for real.
Right, right. How the nepotism is actually keeping me down. I don't know if you know that.
Yes, yes.
John Smoltz had this to say on a podcast about generational pitchers. In 3 years, there might not be any generational pitchers anymore.
Mark my words. I'll give it 3 years. When the generational three-year pitchers, the great guys that we know are going to call it career here in the next 3 years, you're never going to see them again. The Verlanders, the Kershaws, Adam Wainwright just retired. You're never going to see Charlie Morton. You're never going to see Zach Wheeler. Like, that to me should be the narrative that organizations are going, man, we got to find a way to reverse this narrative because that commodity is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and we're going to have to replace it more, more, and more.
Okay.
I
let me just say something before you judge this real quick, because I'm the one who brings the talent in. You're the one who eventually books the results here.
Yeah.
I hate the fact that I was on the fence about even bringing this one in. I hate the fact that what made me bring it in was the odd dropping of Charlie Morton's name amongst all those Hall of Famers that he was mentioning.
That's exactly where I am. I can't. I don't.
It's
so bad that he put Charlie Morton
in. It doesn't make any sense.
And we love Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton would tell you that doesn't... Listen, John.
You know what? Morton would. Charlie Morton is probably wondering why I was mentioned with Verlander and Kershaw and Zach Wheeler. Yeah,
I appreciate it, but I think this is the first time I've been called a generational MLB pitcher in my life.
Yeah.
So... that makes it bad. Mark my words at the beginning.
Yeah.
I had missed that the first time we played it. Mark my words gives it a level of confidence that I think does vault it up a little bit.
It's tough talk. Yep.
Oh, we could go through the... So basically, I misheard it the first time too earlier this week. But basically he's saying after these guys retire, there's not going to be any of these pitchers that have that same cachet or anything, and I think that's a bad take.
Yeah, I don't know that it's true. I think
any of the current pitchers can't be elevated. You know, after 10 years from now, they're not going to be viewed the same way.
I think the spirit of his take is the game is changing for starting pitchers, which overall.
Yeah.
But I think he did a poor job of illustrating and framing it. But yet, is that enough to knock out Keith Smith?
It's got a lot of potential, but he also didn't have the same like odd venom towards a hometown quarterback that Keatsman did, so no, he does not dethrone Keatsman.
Keatsman is kicked out again. This next one is from Hayden, right, Seth?
Hayden
of
Winks.
Underdog?
Yeah.
Hayden Winks of Underdog, who contends that the Texans actually the worst trade in franchise history, the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
Yeah.
That now, lo, these many years later, as it turns out, the Texans won the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
You probably think that the Texans lost that David Johnson for DeAndre Hopkins trade, but guess what? You turned out to be wrong.
Wrong!
In addition to getting David Johnson, the Texans also received a 2020 second round pick and a 2021 fourth rounder. That second round pick, well, immediately wasted, nose tackle, nobody cares. But that 2021 fourth rounder turned out to be awesome down the line. The Texans called the Panthers the next draft, offered that fourth round pick and some other draft capital to move all the way up to 89th overall. They really had nobody at wide receiver, so they took developmental ex-wide receiver Nico Collins. Definitely took out some time, but Nico Collins is now a bona fide superstar and a 12th overall pick over on Underdog Fantasy.
How do you like them, Max?
More importantly, the Texans have C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins under contract through at least the 2027 season. They've already won two playoff games together. In those games, Nico Collins, 96 yards in a TD, 122 yards in a TD. Not bad for just a throw-in.
Okay, this is where, real quick, and I'll let you lay this out, Seth, but just real quick for benefit of the people only listening on audio right now, this is why it's not a bad idea to go find YouTube or Twitch to watch, because Seth's reaction, there are certain bad takes where it's just funny and he's cracking up laughing. There's other ones where it looks like he's experiencing actual physical pain as he's listening to the takes, and this was a colonoscopy take for you.
I love the fact that he, with a straight face, said they took that fourth round pick and other picks to trade for this other draft who happened to be a wide receiver. He almost makes it sound like they traded DeAndre Hopkins for Nico Collins with that trade.
Yeah.
When in actuality, it's a nice coincidence that Nico Collins is a wide receiver. This is like making a bad deal, but eventually you take 20 of those dollars that you got when you sold off your Chevette for $200
yeah,
and actually made a good decision somewhere down the line. It's like it's trying to keep track of your individual dollars in a business.
Yeah.
And somehow acting like, well, actually, we know. Remember that really bad product we rolled out? But we did keep like $100 from that. And then eventually we pooled that $100 with more money and it ended up being a great deal. There you go.
I'll tell you.
This is why people get fired.
Yeah. I will tell you, as a Texan fan, having listened to that take now at least four or five times, the part now where I'm at, I'm insulted as a Texan fan that this person completely ignores the damage that trade did over the period of time that it mattered. Right?
Like, and the guys that made the move for the DeAndre Hopkins trade were not the guys who eventually ended up taking that fourth round pick and making something of it.
Yep, yep.
So it's like the old boss made a mistake.
Yeah.
The new boss comes in and cleans things up, and now we're going to credit the old boss for making that bad move that got him fired? No.
So where are we at?
No, boy. I hate his delivery. Mm-hmm. It's not as entertaining. The use of Tutty.
Yeah.
And them dropping that how you like them apples on it too. But
Keatsman's bad, man. Keatsman is a formidable champion right now.
Okay. This has, you know what? This Hayden Winks one, it insults the viewer.
Yep.
And it also fuels the contrarians on Twitter who actually agreed with this take. The minimal number of Texans fans were like, yep, I told you so.
So
yes, this is a new champion.
Winner.
This is bad. This is bad.
All right, let's see. We got two more challengers. Let's see how it stands up. We'll make this one quick because I don't think this one is going to take over Hayden, but Seth's the one who books the results here. This is Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of Mizzou, their college football team, at SEC Media Days. He is apparently advocating a 30-team college football playoff.
You just hit the podium and pitched a 30-team playoff. Walk me through that. Is that something you've been stewing on? Is that off the top of the head with freestyling up there?
No, it's not really something that's outrageous. It's based off of the 12-team playoff where you had automatic qualifiers, but now we've decided we want to expand it to 16. So instead of doing 11-5, which you're going to put 11 teams in the hands of a human committee that nobody's going to agree. They're all going to have implicit bias. Why would we even do that? I mean, nobody thinks that the NCAA, we spend hours arguing on about who was the 69th and 70th team in the NCAA tournament. What do you think we're going to do with the 11 there? So why not expand the opportunities, give four play-in games to the SEC, four in play-in games to the Big Ten, three to the ACC, three to the Big 12, and say, man, create more opportunities for the fan bases to get excited, create more opportunities for players to compete for championships. And that doesn't sit well with probably some of the blue bloods who are going to consistently be ranked in preseason rankings in the top 25 explicitly because of their names, not necessarily because of their teams, but because of the brand bias that we have in college football. Instead, let make people earn it. Make people earn it on the field.
Okay, to be clear, what he's advocating, Seth, is take the humans out of it altogether, so the selection committee, and use the standings in those conferences to create essentially a, like little mini play-in brackets to the big tournament against each other.
I think this this would be the best way to get a tournament where you see nothing but the best freshman and sophomore, many of whom were backups during the regular season, as every single draft prospect fails the hell out.
You're 100% right. That is a great this point.
This would be the best group of 19 and 20-year-olds you could see playing college football.
Opt-outs would be massive in something like this.
And yet, because it's the Wild West in college football right now, and it's not like he's making horrible, horrible arguments. Who knows? For all I know, there's going to be 32 teams in the NCAA playoffs a few years from now.
Yeah,
so this doesn't this isn't a bad enough take to beat any of those.
100%. I agree with you. It's a take I kicks out. So who's Hayden Winks from Underdog is our champion. He just kicked out. It's more of a take I disagree with and don't want than it is a classical bad take. Like he thinks that they're. I do think the bad part of it, yeah, you're right. They're asking players to essentially play like at least a couple more games here on top of the rest of the playoffs and on top of a 12-game regular season. And I know the guys, the players I know from 30,000 feet, they, quote, get paid now, but a ton of them don't make enough to justify two more games worth of punishment on their bodies. You know, like that's – all right, so last one here. Here was Mike Francesa's review of the – Mike Francesa, longtime New York radio host, streams now for Bet Rivers, a betting website. This was part of his 8-minute rant about how horrible the new Superman movie is.
What I'm getting into is this stunk as for someone who's a old-time TV show Superman guy trying to get entertained for a couple hours and wants to see Superman. This movie was pure torture to sit through. Torture. I mean, I'll tell you this. If my name was on the credits, I'd hide it. That's how bad it was. This was 2 hours of this new Superman. It was a decent. He wasn't Christopher Reeve, but he was okay Superman. 2 hours of him getting the crap beat out of him. Who wants to see Superman get beat up for 2 hours? He's getting beat up by everybody. Plus, you have other superheroes in the movie. I didn't go there to see some guy named Mr. Terrific. I didn't go there to see the Green Lantern or some lady named Hawk something or other. I don't even know who she was. Okay, these other superheroes who he calls on. Who needs other superheroes? This is a Superman movie. You want to see Superman flirt with Lois Lane, keep his disguise, and battle crime. That's what you want to see. Early on, there's robots. I don't want robots. Okay, I don't want robots taking care of Superman. I don't. Then there's a super dog. Who came up with a super dog? I mean, we all like dogs, okay? And I didn't like the dog getting beat on in the movie. It bothered me. But, hey, who came up with a dog with a cape?
So, Ben, thank you, Ben, for pointing out. Because at first, the only reason he's in the running for Takemania is because at first I didn't think he would be or should be because it's his opinion on
it's
a movie. You can like or hate a movie however much you want. But the fact that Ben found that the first time Super Dog appeared in the Superman comics was 1955.
Right.
So as Francesa is, presenting himself as an old-time Superman guy, where does this dog come from? Well, it comes from right around the time you were born, Mike Francesa.
Yep.
I don't know where they are. They just introduced this out of nowhere. But it's at the end of the day, it's his opinion. Mike Francesa wants them to do the same Superman movie over and over and over again.
Yeah.
He does not. He'd rather see. He's probably a big fan of all these sitcoms that are reboots now.
Oh, for sure.
New sitcom is an old sitcom these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is annoying me because, man, it makes me feel old. But no, he cannot. It's
not
at the end of the day, it's his opinion on the movie.
Not a winner. All right, there you go. All right. So our new champ. That's it for Takemania. Our new champ, Underdog. Underdogs. Hayden Winks, as you said it is, Seth?
Yeah, I believe so, yes. Hayden Winks.
Hayden Winks, who said that the Texans actually won the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Hayden Winks.
Plus, he also, the fact that he put that little how do you like them apples drop from Good Will Hunting, that's been, I like that movie, but that's one of my least favorite scenes in any movie ever. That you're badass. Your badass thing you're going to say is, how you like them apples?
Yeah, that's kind of...
Never did he sound like the nerd that he actually was more than in that moment.
That kind of plays into the question of the day on In the Loop yesterday of like old-timey sayings that people still use.
You can see Ben Affleck and Matt Damon sitting around. We're like, hey, how do we sound like Southies? As they're writing. How about you say, how do you like them apples? do tough kids say that around? I'm like, yeah, okay.
Totally. All right, that's Take-A-Mania, brand new champ, as we've had several weeks in a row here, man. That title has been passed around. All right, circling back to the Texans. The ESPN top 10 position group lists are all done. They went through all 11 of them over the last 11 days. There were 11 Texans that hit the radar on these votes. I think there's one big thing about these 11 guys that illustrates how Nick Caserio is executing his plan right now, almost to perfection. We will tell you what that is coming up next. All right, so we'll close the book this week on the ESPN Top 10 series that they did, Top 10 at each position, the vote that they did with 70 various executives, coaches, and scouts voting on the top 10 players at each position. The Texans did okay on this thing. They had 5 players land in the top 10 at their position. They had 3 honorable mentions, which is, you know, anywhere from 11 to 15. And then they had 3 players also get at least 1 vote. So 11 guys, Seth, hit the radar. And I think what's interesting about this is I think it's pretty accurate in terms of if you're any sort of team, if you're any team in the NFL, especially a good team that lands a bunch of these guys on this list or on these lists, you get a real good kind of snapshot of who your core is, like who your foundational players are. And, you know, so for the Texans, the guys that landed in the top 10 at their positions, Derek Stingley Jr., Nico Collins, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, Joe Mixon, definitely core guys on this team, couple of captains on that list. The honorable mentions, C.J. Stroud, obviously a core guy, the most important guy. 2 safeties, C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Kalen Bullock being honorable mention. And then the also receiving votes, they're a little more off the grid a little. Like Jalen Petrie, I think they definitely view him as one of those guys based on the contract they gave him. Dalton Schultz, because he got a vote or two from people. I don't know if that means he's a foundational guy, but okay. And then Christian Harris is just kind of a wild card in this thing. But I think certainly those other 8 guys who were at least honorable mention, and I'll throw Petrie in there, that's sort of the foundation of this team. I think what, if I were Nick Caserio and I were looking at this, I think where I would look at this and I would say, man, this is going largely according to plan. Largely, because I think the offensive line is still way too big an outlying question mark on all of this right now. But at least in terms of how we're going about building this thing, how we are acquiring guys, of those 11 guys I just named, 7 were drafted by the Texans, 2 were signed in free agency, and then 2 were those sort of about to be cut, but I'm going to give you a 7th round pick or I'm going to give you Kenyon Green guys. I think if you were to ask Nick what the ideal ratio is, of the core of your team, I think proportionally this is how he would do it, where like 2/3 of the guys are guys that we drafted. The other, you know, and the rest of it, the other third is a combination of guys that we vetted pretty well that they fit in, and we're either signing them or we're trading before they get put out on the market.
Well, and the way the Texans have been operating and where they've made a lot of the improvements that I'm really intrigued by is that I like to use the Astros as a model for any sports franchise in any sport, because obviously there's going to be a lot of differences. But the biggest thing that I don't think Luno gets enough credit for, but that was huge in why the Astros remain as good as they are today, was how he structured the minor league system to be all about development and coaching and teaching things consistently and doing it in a way that a lot of other teams weren't or still aren't doing. And you get the absolute, that's why their pipeline was always not rated as good as it actually ended up being. Mm-hmm. Even when it was rated high, it probably wasn't rated as high as it should have been, because people didn't, they undervalued how some of those prospects were, but the Astros get the absolute most out of them. And then obviously they made great decisions on the draft and Latin American players and all of that. So there's the talent identification, and then there's the actual development of the talent. And I think Caserio and D'Amico have reached a good point where they know the types of players they want to go after, and it's up to Nick to go out and find those guys and see how it's all going to fit. But then D'Amico as a head coach in developing those guys, like Kamari Lasseter. Hey, Kamari Lasseter is a second-round cornerback and plays way above and beyond where most second-round cornerbacks ever end up playing. I think we've seen it time and time again with various linebackers. They play above the expectations, both in San Francisco and here. Now it's a matter of just transferring that over to the offensive side of the ball. Yeah. I mean, we've seen, since D'Amico's been a head coach, we've seen way more of it on the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side of the ball.
The most intriguing category of player in this whole thing are the guys that were going to get cut, and then Nick says, well, we'll give you a seventh-round pick, or we'll give you Kenyon Green. I mean, Joe Mixon was a top 10 running back in the eyes of this group of experts around the league. C.J. Gardner-Johnson hasn't played a snap for the Texans yet, but he's enough on the grid to be honorable mention at safety. And honestly, I think what's probably keeping him out of the top 10 is just his admitted personality flaws, I'll call it, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe some people view him as flaws.
Or at the very least, like, things that he I think there's a narrative about C.J. Gardner-Johnson that's based on how he may have been when he was younger.
Yeah.
And he's still working his way through defying that or proving that narrative wrong. And it's going to take a little while for him to do it. You gotta change your behavior and then act that way for a long time. So there's kind of a narrative about it.
Yeah, there is. Let's listen.
Justified, but I think he has changed and matured.
Yeah, of all the newcomers, I mean, we'll talk about this as training camp approaches next Wednesday. We'll be out there next Wednesday. Of all the newcomers, he's by far the most intriguing one to me, just based on his personality. This was C.J. Gardner-Johnson on the Pivot podcast, just talking about his mindset before the Super Bowl last year.
Do you turn up the energy so the rest of your team
I calm down.
Follows that?
I calm down.
Really?
You can ask the film team. This third quarter, 6 minutes left. Take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. Because I know if I get out my body or get too up, we get out of control. Mm. It's been the biggest games we done played, and I was just like, I can't do what I do. I can't do what I do. Super Bowl, I was fine being the safety valve and understand, I just don't let the ball go over our head. I don't care about no tackle right now. I don't care about knocking somebody head. That's not my job right now. I calm down.
Yeah, I'm impressed by his self-awareness.
Well, and mind you, you got to remember, this is in the same season in which he had been ejected from the Commanders game. Yep. For not anything that he did on an actual play, but because of two different altercations. One with the Commanders receiver there, I'm blanking on who it was. And then the second time, it wasn't after a hit he made. It was after a Zach Bond hit, but he was jawing at the opposing players or whatever it might be. So he got ejected for that. But then you go to the Super Bowl, and one of the most iconic moments of that game for me was the Travis Kelce, who is a master at baiting people into getting flagged. He just goes out there and he sticks his jaw in people's faces. The officials let it happen. God knows why. And then somebody retaliates and gets a flag. Travis Kelce got hit by another Eagles player. And then he gets up and he's searching out C.J. Gardner-Johnson to get in his face. And C.J.'s just standing there with his hands behind his
yeah. back. Like, yeah.
Probably giving him interesting grin or something,
yes.
You know, like almost like daring him to. But I think that was like C.J. Gardner-Johnson learned something in the course of last season about, all right, I got to know when to turn it down. I got to know when not. I can't be 100% full C.J. Gardner-Johnson all the time.
Yeah.
I got to dial it back at times. So I know that's, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into just a couple moments, but him saying that, like, I understand that in this moment, in the Super Bowl, it can't be about me making a tackle or me doing this or that. It's all about the team. Like, that shows a lot of growth. I'm excited about it. I think for a guy with his personality, sometimes it's just a matter of finding the right fit. And I think Philadelphia may have been the right fit, but there's just too much baggage there already from maybe what he was like when he was a younger player. And they had to make decisions.
Yeah.
They had to make decisions as they were paying a bunch of guys. So he wasn't. It's not like C.J. Gardner-Johnson was a cap casualty per se, but when they have to make decisions about where are we going to be uncomfortable, like there was just too much baggage.
I think there are some general similarities, Seth, to the decision that the Eagles made with C.J. Gardner-Johnson. to the decision the Texans made with Laremy Tunsil, which is, oh yeah, the cap is a thing. Laremy's probably going to want an extension at some point, and he's a good player. And I think similarly, the Eagles are like, okay, C.J. Gardner-Johnson makes this. He's a good player, but we've got all these other guys, similar to the Texans having all these other guys eventually. And we'll talk about Will Anderson in the next segment. I think personality ended up factoring in. Now, very different personalities, obviously. Like, Laremy's personality factored in, I think, in that he probably... Maybe I'm overstating it, but didn't care enough. C.J. Gardner-Johnson might care a little too much in some ways.
Well, you know? No, in one way, if you think about that, okay, these guys might have personality quirks or whatever that aren't quite fits.
Yeah.
I think C.J. Gardner-Johnson's personality fit the personality of that Eagles defense. It's just there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
As far as Laremy, like, man, he is not a bruising football player. He's a finesse football player.
Yeah.
And D'Amico presumably would like the offense to take on more in the mindset of physicality that the defense already has. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, you know, he fits the physicality and all that of the Texans defense. But Laremy Tunsil, he just doesn't quite fit that mold or mindset or type of player, perhaps.
I get this is the way I would frame the point I was trying to make, which is that finances were enough of a reason to where the teams themselves could give that to the player as the reason why they were moving on. There may have been other things, but we can tell the guy, it's just there's a salary cap. We can only pay so many.
It played
guys.
A part in the gentlemanly way to handle it is to say that it's the Eagles said they wanted to go with youth, and C.J. Gardner-Johnson would say, "Look, I'm 27 years old. Yeah. What are you talking about?" I think part of it is that Reed Blankenship was, I think he was a 2022 college free agent.
Yeah.
It probably really wasn't on their radar in terms of long-term planning a couple years ago, but he's a young guy that's played well for them.
If you're wondering what Will Anderson Jr. is going to make if he is once again a Pro Bowl, All-Pro, near All-Pro caliber player next year, we got the answer, I think, yesterday. We'll have that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, there are a handful of texters, Seth, that got a good sophomoric chuckle out of the fact that you said Travis Kelce is a master at baiting, which thus would make him
they turned
a master.
That into a little bit of, he's a baiter. He is. Yeah. I'm gonna pretend I did that intentionally. Yeah.
Baiter.
I'm gonna pretend I was smart enough to come with that on my own.
Yeah. I think you actually are.
As a baiter, he's a master.
That's right.
You know?
He's the master variety of a baiter. I tells you. Yeah, got a lot of LOL.
Remember when you were 12 years old and that was like the worst insult anybody could accuse you of?
Oh,
because
dude.
Back in the day, it was more, we were more, more
taboo.
We were more puritanical back in the day.
Yeah.
Sean and I, guys our age, pure as the driven snow we were. No, we did all the same things you kids do. It's just we were incredibly secretive about all of it.
I was thinking about this. I was watching a little Seinfeld marathon the other day. I think that episode where they had the contest to see who could go without doing it for X amount of time. I think that increased the acceptability of discussing it or kind of knowing like, oh, everybody does it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere late in – yeah, it used to be it was later in your teenage years when people started to kind of be just like – and it's probably been like this for a long time.
Yeah.
You start to realize like, oh, okay, I'm not the depraved weirdo for doing things that, you guys are doing depraved weird stuff.
There was this poor kid, Tom Flaherty, in my junior high in seventh grade, who got caught, like he was in the basement of his parents' house and his buddies were coming over to go get him. And they looked down in the window, down into the basement. And there he is down there, you know, working away. And he had to change schools. Like it was
because
everybody ran and squawked at everybody like, oh my God, look at Tom Flaherty.
I can't believe that guy was doing that thing that I totally do. Human beings are the worst.
The worst. The worst.
Our ability to be hypocrites is just it's impressive, really.
Okay,
impressive.
Let me ask you this. Where do you come out on the sympathy scale? In light of T.J. Watt signing a 3-year, $123 million contract extension with the Steelers yesterday, where do you come out on the sympathy scale that his older brother, J.J. Watt, only made a paltry $129.7 million for his entire 12-year career?
I will confess to this. I caught myself early this morning around about 4 a.m. I read the note that you had put in here.
Yeah.
And my first reaction was, oh, poor J.J.
Not poor at all.
He paid $129.7 million.
Ain't that poor.
I'm acting like he was a casualty of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
It is a... It's a How does a man live?
Yeah.
How does a man live? You know, taxes, is, she takes a bite, you know.
Right. You know, JJ's from Wisconsin.
After taxes... You know, he would have had a paltry like $80 million. Oh, what do you do with that?
JJ is from Wisconsin, and they talk about cheese all the time, but it was that era where he was on the government cheese, only making $16 million a year. Couldn't keep the lights on. Yeah. Oh, man. It is wild, though. It is wild. Like, look, JJ would have made much closer to what TJ is going to eventually make if he hadn't got injured at the worst possible times contractually. Like, the very years that... that JJ would have done what TJ is doing, which is agitating for a new deal while you still have years left on your existing deal.
Yeah.
JJ's getting back surgery. JJ's breaking his leg. JJ's got issues all over the place. He was never at a point.
Those were poor decisions by him.
He was only, you know,
a lot of times these athletes are done it by their poor decisions.
Shouldn't have done it. Well, maybe should have changed his workouts, but that's neither here nor there. But JJ only really had that kind of leverage one time at one juncture in his career. And it was at the end of his rookie contract. Now, he still made $130 million. But I thought what's jarring is not even a J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt thing. It's if you go look at J.J.'s income year over year over year, it topped out at about $16, $17, $18 million. Like the big extension that he signed in 2014 was about $16 million a year. T.J. is making $41 million a year. It's 10 years later. That's how high... That was the biggest salary for a non-quarterback at the time, if I'm not mistaken. J.J. Watt making $16 million a year. In 10 years, it's gone from $16 million to $41 million for the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. Like, the salary explosion is bananas in that
league. It's nuts. It's nuts. And it's always been crazy monopoly money in that. I feel like J.J. would be the last person to... act, you know, be a grumpy old man and be like, yeah, back in my day, I should have made that money.
Yeah.
And JJ's talked to, I know he's talked in interviews about having conversations with TJ and Derek when he was in the league about, you know, maybe just being a little bit more careful with your workouts, and you don't have to be, be squatting 700 pounds. You got to try to find that right balance.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, those psychotic workouts might have been what fueled, like, could JJ have been a three-time defensive MVP without those psychotic workouts? It's impossible to say.
That's right.
He could have made more money in his career.
Yeah.
Without if hypothetically he hadn't been quite as psychotic in his workouts, but he had stayed healthy, but maybe wasn't as good at his peak, he still could have perhaps made more money in his career if he had just kind of evened it out a little bit.
The way he chose to do it made him an unquestionable Hall of Famer early on. By year five, he could have retired after that third Defensive Player of the Year, and he's a Hall of Famer. You know,
there's only three guys that have been defensive MVP three times in their career.
And at that time, it was just two. Aaron Donald came later, but now three. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So this time next year, my prediction is the Texans will have signed the highest paid quarterback and the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. If Will Anderson Jr. has the type of year that we think he can have this year, and C.J. Stroud just has to have a really good year, he doesn't have to be an MVP or anything, this is just the way the quarterback, unless one or both of them choose to do the Mahomes thing where you're not taking the most, so you can leave some for other people and build a team and whatnot. And I don't know for sure that either are wired that way. They both seem like great leaders and great dudes, but being a great dude, I don't equate that to wanting to get the most money. I don't begrudge anybody wanting to get the most money. That does not make you more or less of a good person. I think this time next year, Seth, the Texans will have signed the highest paid quarterback and highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history.
Yeah. I guess if you look at the Cowboys, one thing Jerry Jones will say that is true is it's hard to have three guys who are the top paid at the position on a team. So where the Cowboys have a quarterback, a wide receiver, and a defensive end, getting ahead on the Nico Collins contract is big in that regard. Because if Nico can stay healthy for two straight seasons, he would totally be one of those guys and kept up his production.
Yeah.
He'd be one of those guys that would be, he would get a top wide receiver contract.
Yep.
So at the very least in the short term, I don't think you're not necessarily in danger of being in that predicament.
No.
And you've got Derek Stingley taken care of to where by the time his contract kicks in, it's not going to be, he's not one of the highest paid defensive backs in the league.
I mean,
he'll be one of them, but not at the very pinnacle of it.
I know Nick says they look at things in 2-year windows. Look, if I had to guess, the day they drafted C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr., they at least started looking at the cap in a way where we're like, okay, where these two guys are going to be top of market guys. I'm not saying they put it into the formula in the computer, but they know you draft those guys for the right to have that kind of day, you know, down the road.
Can we, before we do the toss sponsored by D&M Leasing, can we listen to this J.J. Watt speech?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, here's JJ.
I know it's a pep talk to send us into the weekend.
It's a pep talk to send us into the weekend. Speaking of the Watt brothers, here's JJ Watt. This week he was in Wisconsin, and he gave this speech to the Badger football team.
When I came here as a walk-on, it was my dream to play for Wisconsin. I left a scholarship. I left a starting position because I have a dream, and I want to go for that dream. If it fails, I want to know that I failed going for what I want to accomplish. So I came here and I walked on. When I left high school, I had told my parents, don't worry, I got college paid for. I got a full scholarship at Central Michigan. I'm gonna go there, life's gonna be great. But then I had to come back and tell them, psych, you gotta pay for it. So I put my own back against the wall. Every single day that I came into this building, this exact building, that exact indoor, I was putting my future on the line. Every day. So whatever decision I made that day was a decision towards what my future was going to look like. And that's what you're doing right now. Whether you realize it or not, you're in a position in your life where your future is boundless, endless. You have incredible opportunities in front of you. But it matters what you do every single day for yourself, for your team, for the entire state of Wisconsin. Sometimes you fight, sometimes you brawl, but it's always for the betterment of the team, and at the end of the day, we're all brothers together. You guys may have been at a different school 6 months ago, you may have been in high school 6 months ago, you may have been a starter, whatever you are, but you're all Wisconsin Badgers today. And when you take that field in the fall, you are all Wisconsin Badgers, and you're all representing that W, you're representing all of us that played before you, and you're representing this entire state. I want nothing, nothing but the best for you. And I don't care what it takes to get the best. But realize that you have an opportunity in front of you right now. But every single guy in here needs to grab it. And you need to hold each other accountable to do it. It's not going to get done if it's only one or two guys leading the way. Every single guy, every single day, every single minute. You either choose greatness or you get forgotten.
Oh, the end. That's a good end. You either choose greatness or you get forgotten.
Dude, I might be 50 years old, but nobody's gonna work harder for Wisconsin football this weekend than I am.
Yes, me too. Me too.
I am.
I'm going to see Superman today. I'm gonna watch that movie with Wisconsin like.
Do the fervor. Badgers proud?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I am. Oh yeah. If you take out all the Wisconsin stuff, that got me going, man. I'm 50 years old, but I feel like my whole future is ahead of me after I listen to that speech.
It was a really good speech. It was excellent, and I love how the energy built more and more as it went on. My one disappointment in that speech was where towards the end he said, "And I don't care what it takes," because I was hoping it would turn to like, even if it takes anabolic steroids. Like, I was hoping he would start.
Do you care about your brothers enough?
I was hoping he would start listing some things that were highly illegal to do just to get Wisconsin good at football again. Yeah. Good job, JJ, if you're listening.
Yeah,
excellent
turns into
work.
A pitch for some genetic engineering startup that he's working on.
Yeah.
And that's why you guys are all going to give me a vial of blood today.
No, he turns it into like a pitch for venture capital. I know you guys are all getting NIL now. For $20,000, you can be part of this. Like, hey, thought we were getting a pep talk. We're getting a timeshare pitch here. The chuckling you hear is John Lopez, Reggie Atatula. The gentlemen are here from In the Loop, fellas. Crosstalk, sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing, by the way. How we doing? How we
ready to go win 10 wins and lose in the Rose Bowl?
For Wisconsin.
Yeah!
It's what we do.
I am him.
Yeah. Yeah, how we feeling? How we
feel
doing?
Good, great, man.
Yeah, that's good.
Friday?
Oh, yeah. We get sports back today.
We were saying
it's been a pretty fun week, though, even with no, like, literally, other than the All-Star game, no games being played this
year. Yeah, a lot of stuff happening.
Been fun, man. Mm-hmm. The two people, Seth and I determined that the two people getting caught at the Coldplay concert, mm-hmm. the CEO and his HR, head of HR staff, young lady, her name is
Executive
me.
Of People.
Yeah, Chief People Officer.
Chief People Officer. She took that job very seriously.
Very, very seriously, yes.
I was like, I need to know all the people intimately.
Well, go back.
So to speak.
Yeah. So they picked.
Biblically, in fact.
Yeah. They picked a really bad week, at least in our world, yes. A really bad week to do that. Like, I don't know how much attention in the sports world mm-hmm. it would have gotten if it happened, like, during any given week in the NFL season, because there's so much stuff to talk about, you know?
That's a good question.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been
this
nearly.
This is the perfect example.
Yeah, like we during football season, we spent two segments on it today, and I don't think anybody in the building batted an eye.
I dug up some advanced stats on it.
What do you mean?
I did. I'm going to share.
I'm not lying.
Advanced.
Are they on the doc or not?
They are on the document.
I have advanced stats.
Can you tell us the category? These are they like relationship stats? Or are they
integrations? How many likes?
Engagement stats.
I contend, and whether Reggie wants me to do it or not, I'm going to wedge it into the show today.
Yeah.
but
why are you pretending like I'm your boss? That's not how that works
some
at all.
Gatekeeper over here. Yeah.
I contend that it is the biggest. Story, pop culture story of the year so far in this country.
Oh, really? that's bold.
Okay.
I have stats to back it up.
Takeamania is over.
I have stats to back it up.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm here for a logical argument.
Yes.
What time are you doing that?
I don't know. What time are we doing that?
We can throw that in at 12:40.
12:40.
Okay. Let's do that. Why not?
Okay, I'll be right in between.
I bet. I think there's a good chance the woman could end up parlaying this into like a podcasting
career
or something. Yeah.
Talk to a girl.
You see her friend next to her. Her friend next to her was knew something was up too.
Reportedly, so,
she works there.
Yes. She works there reportedly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's,
she's not the HR. She's the what?
She's a chief people officer.
Chief people officer.
Yeah.
Which was, it's HR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what? The country of Bhutan has, they don't call it gross national product. They call it gross national happiness. There's something their king created back. No, Sean, it's cool.
It is?
I watched 60 Minutes, an 8 minute blurb on 60 Minutes, which I'm sure glossed over all kinds of choices.
Yeah.
But still, I'm into it. I think I might start doing the show from Bhutan next year.
That'd be fun. Area, place of happiness. Do it.
Might be a hard place to get them into the kind of the hatred that fuels sports radio, but I can work at it.
It does not feel like a petty enough country for Payne and Pendergast to be emanating from, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
So when you mention this as like, hey, this particular time period made it big, I'm like, I agree, but I also wonder, because the vibe that this one gave me in a very condensed space was like, you remember the TV anchors that were both married except having relations with each other? Robach, TJ Holmes?
Yeah.
This had that feel to me. Like, work romance that ultimately breaks up both of y'all marriages, but y'all want to be together. They ended up with a podcast as well. Yeah. But that became a thing. People talked about that in a big way. So I was like, I wonder if this is just, we love mess.
Yeah.
And extramarital affair mess is one of the top degrees or, subsections of mess.
It did have all the ingredients,
Is there a podcast still going?
Highly doubt it. I'll do the research right now.
I found the two of them annoying. She was married to Andrew Hsu of Melrose Place fame.
I am interested in y'all's answers on the question of the day.
Question of the day. Give it to
Simply
us.
Because I know Seth is going to have a good one, and no pressure, Seth. Based on T.J. Watt outdoing his big brother,
big time,
in terms of money and such. What's the best thing that ever happened to you because you were the younger sibling? Or if you're the older sibling, the worst thing that ever happened to you because
Seth's,
of your younger
Seth's
sibling?
Got a lot of worst thing that happened to me because I was the younger sibling.
My older brother he brutalized me for years. And then as soon as I got bigger than him, all of a sudden he was the coolest older brother ever.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe I'll just say the best thing that happened to me because I was a younger sibling was that I learned how to endure pain and suffering because of my older brother. And then, but then I also learned that I think I'm a relatively decent person because once I got to the age where I could beat him up, I chose not to usually.
Yeah.
Unless
nice
we were drunk and he just wouldn't stop. And I had to stop him.
That happens.
Yeah, and you have siblings.
I do. I have two younger brothers. I'm the oldest.
And did they ever get away with something?
100%. That was the worst part for me is I had parents that, and my dad's still with us. My mom's not. But my parents were among the parents of the kids I hung out with in high school. They erred more to the strict side of things when it came to drinking in high school. So I honestly didn't drink until like late in my junior year in high school. I'd never had a beer, you know, whereas most of my friends, freshman year, eighth grade, you know, stuff like that. So when I finally did start drinking, if there'd be beer in the trunk of my car and I'd get caught, punished, bad punishments, you know, like grounded, yard, like all kinds of manual labor. And you know how much I hate manual labor.
That's right.
All of those things. But the punishments themselves would be just much. They were just way more strict with me on stuff.
Yeah.
My brother Kevin got away with more. My brother Ryan, they were probably going and buying him the alcohol by the time he's 8 years younger than me. So that's just, I don't have any specific stuff other than I took a lot of bullets for my younger brothers to kind of soften up the rents.
My big brothers had to be home on a Friday night or Saturday night at 10:30.
10:30?
10:30.
What were you?
No curfew.
No curfew? Oh, you're my brother Ryan. I hate you. Oh, no curfew.
No curfew.
As long as you were alive the next morning.
Did your parents change on that because they realized...
I was cute. The good one.
They realized like 10:30 is a little much, or... Like, I feel like by the time my parents got to Ryan in high school, they were just like,
That's what it was.
They didn't care.
They didn't care.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. The most baller move I ever made was when I dropped out of school and drove to Florida in my 1982 Mazda GLC. And my mother was so... after that point, I basically had carte blanche to do whatever I wanted because she was so terrified of what I was gonna, like what I was capable of doing.
You know?
I was ready to just go live. I was gonna go get a job and live on the beach or then, wait until, and then go work up in Alaska or something. So the fact that I got back into high school and stayed at home, she was kind of like, all right, just whatever. Stay in school, and I won't mess with it.
I'm glad you clarified that, because you just said school at first. I'm like, I need to know. It matters whether it's college or high school here.
Oh, no, it was high school.
High school, okay. Well, that is a baller. That is a baller move. You were not overstating that one bit.
That hurt my class rank a little bit.
Yeah.
It was good that I had football.
One that one got you into Cornell, buddy. No offense.
That's
your ability to shed blocks.
I went from like third in my class to 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, it turns out you miss an entire quarter of school. It's hard to rebound from.
You only dropped to 20th? What kind of idiots were you going to school with?
They let me make some stuff
they
up.
They did?
You know.
Okay.
Again, football helps.
We understand. We get it. All right. Payne and Pendergast, we are done. You've been listening to Crosstalk, which is brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. Gentlemen, have a great show.
Thanks, man.
Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you, and you just go do everything you can to help the Badgers this year.
Oh, I'm going
to
go. I am going to be so about Wisconsin football. I'm going to go eat so many cheese curds this weekend. It's going to be ridiculous. All right, we're done. We are out of time. Friday is here. The weekend is upon us.